Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of a Pen and a Napkin podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Little pre-pod, quick message here for a couple of minutes. Number 250, holy cow, 250 interview podcasts, and Lord knows how many other ones. I just can't believe all the great things that have happened with this. You know, when I came up with this idea, I thought it would have a chance to be a good thing, but nowhere in my wildest dreams did I ever think it was going to be something like this. I really appreciate everyone's support, all the people that have agreed to talk to me, from gold medal winning Olympic gold medalists to NBA champions to local high school coaches. I mean, and everything in between. It has just been an absolutely awesome journey to bring all of the stuff that I've been fortunate enough to participate with this whole a pen and a napkin thing. Hopefully you've enjoyed it, and I've enjoyed it. I have talked with my wife, and you know, maybe this is just the last third of the coaching career. This is where I just really take off with this and try to do as much as I can to help out the coaches out there who we need to lean on each other. If there's one thing that I've definitely learned in my seasoned and experienced, there it is, state, is we have to lean on each other. If we start tearing each other down to try and build ourselves up, then eventually that's just a house of cards that won't stand. And, so I hope that all the resources that you have here with a pen and a napkin, whether it's podcasts, books, booklets, videos, newsletters, all those different things, I hope it's something that's positive for you as a coach. And I hope it's something that you have enjoyed. For everybody that's ever been on here, I can't thank you enough for it, for your time, for your generosity. The most valuable thing you can do is give up your time to somebody. That's the most valuable currency that any of us have. And for a lot of people, you've given up a lot of your time to listen to this nasally Italian fella from Omaha, Nebraska, talk about basketball, something that I've just been really passionate about since I was a kid. So thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I think you're really, really going to like this 250th pod. Jim Flannery from Creighton University, longtime friend, first time that I've had him on the pod, which is a little bit embarrassing, but, we have a great conversation here today. You're really going to like it. He's going to talk about his evolution as a coach, all the things that, you know, the transition of the program from the Missouri Valley to the Big East, some of the big steps that he's taken in his coaching career, and a lot of other stuff in between. So enjoy this week's pod with Coach Flannery, and thank you to everybody that has made 250 of these podcasts possible. Enjoy. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of a Pen and a Napkin podcast, the weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to our interview series. Holy cow, 250 of these in some way, shape, or form that I've done, and that's I don't know, I think it's pretty cool, but obviously there's people listening, and you know, just thanks so much for that. We are really excited to have this week's guest on. But before we get to this nice young gentleman from the great state of Iowa, we want to recognize our founding sponsor, Cosac Chiropractic, located at 144th and Maple here in Omaha. Coaches, if you or any of your athletes are struggling with balance, neck, or spinal issues, go see Dr. Kevin or Dr. Heidi. Give them a call, 402-964-0300, or check out their website, CosacChiro.com. Follow us on Twitter at a pen and a napkin. We try to put out daily coaching tidbits on the Twitter handle, so be sure to follow us there. If you're listening iTunes, Spotify, wherever it may be. Download, rate, review, give us 5 stars, subscribe. That helps with us. When people look up Coaching Basketball Podcasts, pen and a napkin kind of moves up the rankings there. I don't know how it works, but I know that's what happens. So please do that. And if you have any questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, email me at penandanapkin@gmail.com. All of that stuff is all said and done. And now we get to the real star of the show, Mr. Jim Flannery from Creighton University. Coach Flann, how are you doing this fine Friday afternoon?
You know, Marty, I'm a lot better now that I heard you call me a young man. you better get your eyesight checked. I'm happy to be here. 250 podcasts. That's awesome. That means you and I are cut from the same cloth, and that means we can both talk. So I'm excited to get going because we might be talking over each other, but that'll be a good thing.
It's your show. I'm just here to kind of steer it in the right direction. And, I had my choice between Jim Flannery and John Flannery here today, and I said, I want Jim Flannery. I don't want Sioux City Flannery. I want Omaha Flannery. And that was my demands, and that's the ones I got. So,
well, you did pick the better looking one. I'm going to have to tell my brother that the next time I run into him.
Oh, that's great. Hey, Flann, it's great to have you on. Thanks for having me at practice the other day. It was a lot of fun watching your team play. Looking forward to coming out to a few games this year. When time allots and I can get out. It's hard to believe, Flann. 22 years. I mean, 22 years you have been at the helm of the Blue Jays. And normally we would do a little, your background, where you're from, this type of thing. But, if folks really want to check that out, you've got a whole web page for yourself there at gocreighton.com. So if folks want to check that out, you can do that. So, but, 22 years, Jim, and I remember I am seasoned and experienced. We don't use the old word, Flann. We don't use the O word.
Okay.
But, I remember when you got the job. I remember when Connie moved on, and we'll talk about Connie in a bit. But what are some ways that you feel like you've grown in the last 22 years? Thinking back to that young whippersnapper that took over the helm a couple of decades ago, how do you feel like you've grown as a coach?
Well, I think, you've learned to relax a little bit. I think anytime you first get your first head job, there's a level of insecurity that you have. Am I ready? And what am I not good at? And how do I get better at that? And, you've got all those things rushing through your head about, well, I'm not ready. And I see these other people and I think that they're more gifted or more experienced. And so I think you got to kind of calm yourself down but over the years, you rid yourself of some of that insecurity. I mean, and it's okay to have a little bit of it because we all have weaknesses and flaws and things that we're not as good at. It's when it becomes sort of a paranoia. So I think, to me, the insecurity thing, if it mushrooms into paranoia, that's when you get in trouble and you try to micromanage people. And so I think, anybody who gets to do it as long as I have probably should become less insecure.
At the same time, Flann, you probably want a little insecurity because mm-hmm. that drives you. That fire in the belly, like I'm not good enough at this yet. I still need to get better at this or whatever it may be, don't you think?
Absolutely. I mean, to me, coaching is like being an athlete. You want some nerves. You don't want to have paralysis with nerves, but you want to have some nerves. First, every game I go into, I have nerves, especially, first game of the season, you have, oh gosh, I haven't done this for, 7-8 months, you forget some things and, so I do think you want a little bit of that. I always felt that way as a student when you take a test, you don't want to be so sure that you know everything that you kind of breeze through it. So I do think a little bit of anxiety is good. It's when you reach a threshold where it becomes too much and try to control too many things. And, you know, so you ask me what I'm better at. Well, I have less rage in games. I think that, you know, most people who had probably saw me coach as a younger coach, I just, you know, you don't always manage your nerves in game as well. I think that's one area where I feel like I'm better. And if things aren't going well, I can talk to officials differently and better than I used to. You know, instead of yelling at them, I can, you know, occasionally even just be sarcastic or even joke with them, or, you know, compliment them on a good call because I want the next one. Managing my staff is really an area where I struggled early in my career. I think I didn't do a good job, and maybe not because I was controlling, maybe more so because I wasn't sure what I wanted in some areas, and maybe I didn't direct enough, and little things became bigger. And so I think that was one area where I was really unprepared to, you know, and I'm not a confrontational person, so I struggled with that. I'm still not good at it, but I'm better at it, you know, and managing my staff. So I think that's something, and you know, our staffs have gotten bigger, you know, and
yeah.
But at the same time, I think it's important that your staff doesn't get too big, because I think sometimes you have too many voices and then you don't even know what everybody does.
Yep.
You know, you mentioned Connie earlier, and, you know, when she first left Creighton to go to Nebraska, she, you know, we were talking maybe a month or two after she left, and she said, gosh, I don't even know how to, you know, I don't know what everybody does, and I don't know how to get everybody to do what I'm going to,
you know,
almost too many resources. So I think that's a challenge too, because you want everybody to feel empowered. And you know, we have a bigger staff, but I think at the same time, you have to make it so that everybody feels valued. I think that's something where I've grown.
With that, like, delegation plan, was it just more of you know, you had that, I don't know, that coach's paranoia that we all go through, and you just wanted to make sure it was done the way you wanted it done, or you were just weren't sure what you should delegate out and what you should not delegate out?
I think it's more the second thing. It's just, you're not sure what do you delegate and whose talents fit what role. You know, I think that's one of the tough things is, like, you know, when you add or delete a staff member, because when you hire somebody, you might have a pretty good idea what their strengths and weaknesses are, but you still, it's like recruiting a player.
Yeah.
I've never been 100% accurate in terms of, okay, this player is, her strengths are exactly what I thought they were, and her weaknesses are exactly what I thought they were, and her coachability is exactly, you know.
Yep.
It's the same thing with staff. I know, for the most part, I've known the people I've hired, but it doesn't mean I know exactly what phases of the game they're best in, or what aspects of recruiting maybe they're going to be better at than others. And, you know, can they help us in the area of marketing and donor relations? You know, those are things you have to kind of, and then you worry about, okay, am I making somebody feel less valuable in an area where they have great pride? You know, if they come in and they tell me straight up, hey, I'm not good at this.
Yeah.
Then it becomes easy. But, you know, what if they tell me they're good at something and they're really not that good at something? Or
does that now become an interview question?
Yeah, it does. But you still, you know, you're still kind of trying to navigate that within the context of your staff. So, and then, you know, in having said that, the job has changed too. You know, as you know, you've coached a long time. Kids are different than they were 25 years ago. I mean, I'm not saying it's night and day, but it's maybe night and late afternoon.
Sun's starting to go down. Yeah.
Early evening, you know, so. Yeah. So you got to change, you know, and the game, you know, the game has changed a little bit. I mean, you know, obviously the 3-point line's a little more important than when you and I first got into coaching. And
yeah,
you know, how do you recruit to that? What do you teach? But yeah, I think that's that's part of it too, is the job changes, you know, what's important to recruits and families has shifted a little bit. And how do you manage your staff, and, you know, and how do you manage ideally, you know, I don't always agree with somebody. I think one of the tough things, and you can speak to this too, is when you disagree, you know, a little bit with one of your staff members, but you still want to empower them in an area where you're not fully comfortable with maybe what they think is the right thing to do. And that could be on the court, it could be in practice, it could be in recruiting, it could be in terms of what, you know, what activities are we going to do with the team. But I think that's one of the harder things, is like, okay, he or she's pretty good at this, but man, somebody else on our staff's probably better, but this person takes pride. What do you do?
Yeah.
Those are tough questions, I think, when you're trying to figure out how to, you know, be the best program you can be.
Mm-hmm. What's one or two things you want to get better at?
Well, I always say I want to get better at technology, and I've, you know, like the other day, Jenny, who's our director of ops, came in and I wanted her to do something for me. And she goes, Flan, I'm going to teach you how to fish. I'm not going to fish for you. I'm going to teach you how to fish. And I'm, you know, she, you know, so she sat with me for, it wasn't even something hard. Sometimes I'm like, oh, she can do it quicker than I can. But the fact is, she knows that if she did it this time, you know, a month later or a week later, she'll be, it'll be like, hey, Jenny, can you help me do this again? And she's like, so she's smart enough to know that she needs to teach me how to do it. And maybe I'll forget, but maybe I won't. But I think that's a thing. I think another thing is just trying to figure out what the, you know, what, where student athletes are today in terms of their motivation, and just, you know, how to kind of parse through what recruiting looks like family to family. And, you know, when we recruit somebody, you know, the questions that we ask and the things that we emphasize are in some ways different than they were. And how do you present, you know, Creighton and Creighton women's basketball in the best light to each family? And not that you're going to lie or fib or exaggerate, but just what do you highlight, right, with each family? Because there's a lot of pieces to what Creighton academics is and what Creighton athletics is, and how we travel and what our, you know, offensive philosophy is and our defensive philosophy, and how many players do we play at a time, and how many scholarships are we going to have? What do you emphasize from family to family? So I think those are areas where I think I can get better, because I feel like it's the days of kind of cookie cutter recruiting where you just present what, you know, what Creighton is. It's just got to be a little bit more nuanced than ever.
Well, the good thing for you is you've got a very, very supportive situation there at Creighton. And obviously, if you're at a place for 22 years, you're probably pretty happy with it. And, you know, you've got some things that probably you had things before maybe a lot of other schools had them, like your women's only arena. You know, Sokol's been around for, oh, what's it probably been, about 12, 13 years?
15. I think we opened in 09, so this will be...
Yeah, 15. So 15 years. Yeah. You've got your own practice facility that is just for you guys in volleyball. You know what I mean? And they're right across the street from one another. Life is easy in that regard.
Right.
You know, I mean, just how important, when you're trying to sell Creighton, how important is that for you to be able to show the support that you're getting from your administration, and that you are running a first class operation down there?
Yeah, excellent point. I mean, you know, I think when we've been in the Big East now for, this will be year 12, and when the coaches in the Big East came into SoCal, they're like, wow, this is a beautiful building. It's perfect for women's basketball in terms of size. And, you know, you kind of know that, but then when you hear it from somebody else, it makes you appreciate it even more. And then, you know, we added our practice facility about 6 years ago. And that in a lot of ways has been a game changer for us, because I just think it's very nice, but it's even the access. It's the fact that we have, you know, our players, I mean, Creighton's a small campus, right? And yep. Our players have 24-hour access to that gym. I mean, if they're stressed at 10 at night and they just, you know, spent 3 hours studying and they want to go shoot for 30 to 40 minutes, you know, just to get some stress out, or if they can't sleep in the morning and they want to get up and they want to go shoot for 30 or 45 minutes, they can do that. And I think from a player development standpoint, that has been a game changer for us. As you know, and being in the Big East has been, you know, really helpful. I think we were recruiting pretty well into the Missouri Valley, but I think we've just been able to recruit just a little bit higher level player. And, you know, that's made an impact, so that we've kind of hit the ground running in the Big East. We actually had a good core returning once we got in the Big East. I think that helped us because we had some early success. It wasn't like, oh, we came into the Big East and fell on our face those first two or three years. We actually had a couple good teams, and then you can say to recruits, hey, look, we've been successful already in the Big East, and we weren't even recruiting to the Big East. And so that was helpful. But yeah, you know, to have had Bruce Rasmussen as our athletic director, who was a women's basketball coach, and you know, I think he valued women's athletics and women's basketball, and Marcus Blossom has done a really good job of giving us the resources. You know, we travel better than we ever have, and part of it is we have to, because we're in a conference where, you know, we're more spread out, and we, you know, for better or worse, we play more weekday games. But you know, to Marcus's credit, he stepped up, and you know, so I think we offer a small town, or a small, not small town, because we sell Omaha too, but we offer a small campus feel, a small campus experience, but a big time athletics program. And you know, that's been, I think, super helpful. But like you said, if we weren't resourced the way we were, we wouldn't have had the success that we've had.
Yeah. Has that been the biggest difference between the Mo Valley and the Big East? Is just a little bit more resources, obviously. More television money coming through because of the television contracts, which allows you to, you know, look better in recruiting, which allows you, you know, you're just taking that money and reinvesting it back into it, which then allows you to, in theory, get a little bit of a higher player to go and compete with the high level teams that you've been competing with. Is it just kind of that circular thing there, Flan?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is. I mean, I think when you show that you can compete, and, you know, we've been, you know, we've had as many as, you know, four-ish. I think maybe 1 year we had five teams in our league get into the tournament. And I think, you know, you can sell recruits, hey, we don't have to win the league to get to the NCAA tournament. We don't, you know, it's a little, and we've been able to do that. And now that UConn's in the league, it's really hard to win the league. and win the conference tournament. You know, you could always kind of hold out hope before UConn came in the league. Oh, well, if we finish third or fourth, we could win the conference tournament because there was more parity, but now that gets a little harder. But I think, you know, having mentioned UConn, I mean, they've made it hard in some ways, but they've raised the profile of our league too. So that UConn's won 11 national championships in women's basketball. They're the best program in the history of the sport. And so you're going to compete against the best. And, and, you know, the other part is just, you know, the travel. We talk about, hey, you're going to get to go to New York City, Philadelphia, Chicago, Washington, D.C. And we don't always get to do something cultural or educational or fun when we go there, but a lot of times we do. A lot of times if our schedule works out, we can go do something in the city. even if it's just for a couple hours. I think those are great opportunities for 18 to 22 year olds.
Mm-hmm. Folks, if you are looking for a good book, guess what? I have got something for you. Kings of Their Court, Three Teams, One City, and the Greatest Basketball Season in Nebraska High School History is available today on Amazon.com. It is the story of Tim Cannon at Millard North, Josh Ludke at Creighton Prep, and Doug Woodard at Bellevue West, and the three teams that they had during the 2021 season, the chaos that everybody was living through. The story literally picks up with the outbreak of COVID in March of 2020, and it carries through for the next 365 days. Everything that these players, these parents, these coaches that they went through, from COVID quarantines to George Floyd to the politics of the time to just trying to get the season in a somewhat normal fashion, with these three teams from this one city that were ranked in the top 25 in the country. Now, think about that. That would be hard to do in a New York and a Los Angeles. We had that here in Omaha, Nebraska. It is a terrific, terrific book. Of course, I'm a little biased because I'm the one that wrote it, but I think that if you're a basketball person or if you like a good sports story, a very amateurish version of Friday Night Lights for basketball, this is the type of story that you're really, really going to enjoy. So go to Amazon.com, go to books, type in Kings of Their Court, and it's going to take you right there to it. It's $19.99 for the paperback, $9.99 for the Kindle version. Folks, check it out. I think it's a really, really great story, and I don't think you're going to regret picking up a copy of Kings of Their Court. Let's talk a little bit about, Connie Yori a little bit. Obviously, she was the women's coach at Creighton while you were going to school there. She was there, and then you guys went off to Luther together, and then she got Luther or Loras? I'm getting my L's mixed up. Loras. My Division III schools in Iowa that start with L. I got that a little bit messed up. So,
yeah, and they're both kind of tucked in that northeast corner.
Exactly. So yeah. So that's a forgivable error, Flan. Forgive me for that one. So
exactly.
But you came back with her when Connie moved on to Nebraska. You replaced her. You guys have known each other for forever. She came back and was your special assistant the last few years. I mean, just how much, obviously Connie has influenced you tremendously. Talk about Connie and then maybe, you know, perhaps some other people that have kind of helped you grow as a coach.
Yeah. Well, Connie, as you mentioned, had a significant influence on me when I was at Loras with her. I think I was making $3,500 a semester. It wasn't a year stipend.
that's a big difference.
Not 35,000, 3,500.
Yeah.
She bought me lunch every single day. And, you know, if we went and played golf, Connie paid. And, you know, so, I mean, she just took care of me on a personal level, which was terrific. But and she's only a year older than me, or well over a year older than me. So in some ways we were, kind of learning things together, but and some of the things that she's really good at, I'm not as good at. I wasn't as good at. Mm-hmm. It's really helpful to kind of see what leadership looks like, and you know, and she had to grow too because she was 28, I think, when she got the Creighton job.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a different time.
Sure,
you know, it was a different time. That was over 30 years ago, so it was a little bit easier maybe to do that at that age at that time, but. Yeah, just really thankful for all the opportunities she gave me, the trust that she had in me, but also just to see her navigate tough situations, you know, because when you become a head coach, you have to start making tough decisions and being the bad guy or bad person, you know, because even if all four of our staff members felt a certain way, if the head coach makes the decision and delivers the news, somehow she or he is viewed differently than everybody who may have felt the same thing. So just her and her passion, you know, Connie, I mean, she's fiery. She didn't have a choice that way. But so she was a great mentor to me, and just even a good friend when she went to Nebraska. And that was hard because we played each other, we recruited against each other. But you know, so when she left Nebraska, I mean, I think we waited a year, and I'd gone to lunch with her a couple of times, and I said, "Do you have any interest in just helping us in whatever way you want?" And I don't expect you to put in 60 hours a week. I know you got out because you wanted to get out, but and then we were fortunate enough that she came back and helped us, and you know, just a, you know, she had a little bit different persona as an assistant coach, and but also just a wealth of experience, and so that was great. And then, you know, Bruce Rasmussen had a major impact on me as well. You know, I started out, you know, I actually volunteered for Bruce a couple of years before I went to Loras with Connie, and just, and you know, even as he was already the athletic director, as an assistant coach and head coach, you know, I did, you know, you try to create some independence and separation, but there were times, especially when it was, you know, probably more so with off court stuff, I'm like, you'd go in and be like, "Okay, Bruce, this is what happened, or this is what's going on. What do I do? What do you think?" And just, you know, with whatever hat he had to put on, whether it was the dad hat to talk about it from a parental perspective, or the coaching hat, and or the administrator hat, whatever hat, he was really good at putting that hat on and kind of getting me to that. And he was patient with me because I did have a lot to learn, and you know, there were some bumps, and he gave me opportunities to grow. He didn't, you know, I mean, and you know, and he was direct. "Hey, look, Flynn, you need to get better here and here, but I'm going to give you some resources to get better."
Yeah.
And
that's all you can ask for.
Yeah. And it's really easy in that moment, Marty, to be defensive and be like, "Well, you hired me for a reason." And he did, but he also knew that I wasn't perfect and had growth to do. And so he did a really good job of you know, and in fact, I had, you know, Terry Pettit, who still does work with Kirsten in our volleyball staff. You know, he did some work with me and helped me and navigate some things and just grow as a coach. And so those, you know, and that meant a lot, you know, so those two are, you know, kind of the ones that, and I've had a lot of good assistant coaches who've helped me along the way, in some ways, probably too numerous to mention, you know, specific ways that maybe each of them or a lot of them have helped me, but for sure, Connie and Bruce are right there.
Well, let's not bring up Fritchie at all. That's no, one name we want to keep out of the conversation. So
I don't have enough time for those stories, Marty.
I can only imagine. So the Elite Eight run that you went on in 2022, kind of a pivot point for the program. I mean, you know, you go in, you wore the black hat and dared to knock off Iowa in Iowa City. The directors of production at ESPN were probably not thrilled with the fight in Flans after that one, but no, I say that in a tongue in cheek manner. I mean, it is what it is. You go out, you compete, you play the game, but you know, you made the run. It took South Carolina to defeat you before, you know, the game before the Final Four and the Elite Eight there. You know, what did you learn from that run? Was that kind of the moment where you felt like, okay, If we are in the right place at the right time, we can pretty much run with about anybody in the country?
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit it right there. I mean, I think what it told me, I think, is we're closer to being elite than I thought. You know, because you know, we hadn't been to a Sweet 16. We'd been to the second round, and we'd won NCAA tournament games, and but we really hadn't. In that second round game, we hadn't been that close, but man, you know, when we were able to beat Iowa in Iowa City, and you know, I'm like, wow, we're a little closer to the top than I thought, and then to go beat Iowa State, neutral site, before getting hammered by South Carolina. But you know, I do think it for me, and I know for our players too. It's like, gosh, we can compete on a national stage, and up until that point, you know, Creighton was a lot of times a nice little story in a given year. But I think it really did elevate the program to the point where, you know, this year, you know, we were asked to play, you know, Fox came to me, Fox Sports came to me at our conference meetings in May and said, hey, we want you to play UCLA out in San Francisco. Stanford and Ohio State are going to be the other game. You know, as that conversation kind of evolved, and I'm like, man, we are at a table that we weren't at even 4 or 5 years ago. You know, to have that invitation, you know, hey, you know, UCLA's top five in the country, you know, the name recognition, and Stanford is, you know, one of the top five programs in our sport, and Ohio State. And it's like, okay, and then Creighton. And you know, I've told people, you know, whether it's donors or recruits, like we're at the table that we've never been. We used to be at the back of the banquet hall, or in the, you know, maybe moving toward that front table, but like we're all the way at that front table. And now look, it can go. The other thing is, you know, you asked earlier, like you got to have that little tip. I mean, it can go away.
Yeah.
As quickly as it came, but we are at the table. And so, but if you look back, why? Well, it's probably more than anything. It's that win in Iowa City that kind of helped. Not just it helped our profile, but it helped our players probably believe in themselves and on a different level. And even Flynn, who's coached a long time, is like, okay, maybe we can do more than even I had thought we could.
Oh, you carry yourself in a different way. You feel you do. I mean, because I as ironically enough, on a different thing, you know, I did some work with Kelly Flynn a couple of days ago for A Pen and a Napkin, and that's to be coming in about a month or so. Folks will be able to see that. And my confidence in myself changed. I could pinpoint is when we beat them in the district championship. And this is when Kelly was, I mean, when he had it rolling, you know, and,
right.
And, my own perception of myself as a coach changed in a couple of hours because of that win to getting to the state tournament. Yes, I can do this. Yes, I can bring this team. I am capable of building a program in a positive way, in a right way, that type of a thing. So I completely understand where you're coming from there, Flam, because it's a real thing where you've got to get that first big win or two underneath your belt that really says that, hey, I can run with the big dogs, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just like you said, until you have one of those, it's, hey, we can, or we think we can. It's not we can, it's we think we can. Yeah. And then once you've done it, then you know you can. And that, there's a difference. Mm-hmm. There's a clear difference. And when you live in the coaching world, you can feel that.
Yep. Well, the great thing is you've got some tremendous expectations this year, and you've got, and we'll talk about kind of the actual makeup of your team, but let's kind of take more of the 30,000 foot view here. You know, like you said, you're talking about playing UCLA out in San Francisco. You've made the change. I don't, correct me if I'm wrong, Jim, but I can't remember when you guys have played a game at CHI before. And you're going to be playing UConn, on a Saturday, January 25th. By the way, I need a couple tickets for that.
No problem. We can do that.
but you know, how have you and your staff kind of looked at this season? You know, last year I talked to Carly the other day in practice, and you could still tell that It still stung losing to UCLA last year. Another one of those kind of pivot points, another one of those big jumps is maybe having a chance to host two games that first weekend of the NCAA tournament, being one of those top 16 seeds. I mean, how are you and your staff working through that, trying not to put the cart ahead of the horse, but understanding that, hey, yeah, you know, we got a chance to do something really, really special this season?
Yeah, well, we have a lot. You're right. We have a lot back. We have five fifth-year seniors who've been with us for almost the entire time. And then we added two transfers who happen to both be fifth-year seniors. And so the experience level's there. The schedule is there. I mean, we're playing a really, really hard non-conference schedule, which is good. I mean, this group can handle it. I mean, by next year, we'll maybe simmer down a little just because we'll be so much younger. Mm-hmm. But I do think, you know, I think the way the season ended can kind of be the best of all worlds. I mean, we were really close to, we led UCLA by 10-ish in this third quarter. And, you know, the game went down to the last minute. We lost. But, you know, from a motivation standpoint, I feel like our kids know that, you know, you're like you said, you're a little hacked off that you couldn't close that game. But you also know that you were right there. That's what you tell you. You know, you say that in the locker room. It's like, you guys, UCLA recruits anybody they want in the country, and you let them by 10 in the third, and the game went down the wire, and you know, one shot here, one missed shot there, one, you know, but you know, and hopefully, like you said, you also want to savor the journey, because I think sometimes in sport, or more often than we should, we put so much emphasis on the postseason.
Yep.
You know, and it's like, you know, a year and a half ago, we lost to Mississippi State in the first round. And we just, I mean, honestly, I thought it was maybe one of our two or three or four worst games of the year. And just, you know, we're trying to play bad. Exactly. You know, and I wasn't trying to coach bad, but we just, for whatever reason, we fell flat, and it felt like we had a bad, you know, it felt too much like we had a bad year, even though we had a great year. Yeah. You know, we won, we had our highest seed ever, we were a sixth seed. We just didn't play well that game, and we got off to a poor start. You know, so I guess to go back to your question, it's just, you know, you want to talk about the journey, you want to enjoy the journey, because this group, one of their strengths is that they trust each other, they love each other, they've been around each other, they want the best for each other. You know, so in today's climate where there's so many transfers, you know, there can be a lot of good players on a team, but that doesn't mean that those players are going to fight for each other when things are difficult or have the best interests of everybody at heart when things are good.
Yeah.
And I don't have any, you know, there's no likelihood that that's going to happen on this team. Cause mm-hmm. we've been around each other too much, and we care about each other too much. And so that's what you're hoping for. Cause we have the experience. We have enough talent. Do we have excessive talent? No. Mm-hmm. But we have enough talent, and we have so much experience, and you know, the other factor is just, you know, can we stay healthy? And if we do, I think we're gonna have a great year, but you know, you also have to, as people are gonna put a disproportionate emphasis on the postseason, and hopefully we can relax and play to our best potential then too. Uh-huh.
A Pen and a Napkin University videos are just another way that a pen and a napkin can help you become a better coach. Our university video library is constantly expanding, with topics ranging from interviewing for a job to full court defense to 25 universal truths about coaching. Our university videos will help you round out your skill set as a coach and help you hone your craft. Videos are $10 a piece, with bundling options available. To order, you can DM me on Twitter, send me an email at apenandanapkin@gmail.com, or order from our website, apenandanapkin.com. Be sure to check out the A Pen and a Napkin video library. Coaches are absolutely loving our Taking Over a New Program booklet. As many of you know, I spent 2 years outside of coaching, and during that time, I hung a note card in my workspace at school that said, "Strip the house down to the studs." I took that time to really rethink and reorganize my thoughts on what it takes to run a transformational program. As I prepared for the possibility of coaching again, I organized these thoughts into this 96-page booklet. How much do I trust this booklet? I used this booklet as I went on interviews to help sell myself and my vision for what my new program would look like. If I'm using it to sell myself, why wouldn't I recommend it to you, my listeners? This booklet will help you look at any part of your program, no matter what stage you're at in your program, and help improve it in some way. It's all yours for only $15, which includes shipping and handling. For more information, email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Flan, let's jump into a little John Wooden. How's that sound?
Sounds good.
All right. The John Wooden quote of the day here, from Wooden, A Lifetime of Observations. This week's quote here straddles two pages, page 149 and page 150. I'll read the quote for you, Jim, and you know, chew on it for a couple seconds and let me know what you let me know what you think of it. How's that sound?
Okay. Sounds great. Right.
So the John Wooden quote of the day is, "I like teamwork. The pros don't interest me generally because of all the fancy stuff and the reduced role of real teamwork generally. The player's individual ability is truly amazing, but it has brought about too much one-on-one and less teamwork."
Yeah, I like it. I mean, you know, and that's when you introduce that much money and, you know, in college, now that we have a greater degree of free agency, that's the concern that I have. It's not that we're, you know, that players can make money. It's more about, you know, kind of the unlimited free agency and the willingness to transfer, because I do think that creates more of a me mentality, and it just makes it harder to reach teamwork and see teamwork and expect teamwork. And, you know, so he's on to it. I mean, and again, that's where I have so much respect for our fifth year kids for coming back, not just to play, but to Creighton to play.
Yeah.
Because I think that means something, because, you know, there's some of them that could have gone somewhere else and probably made a lot more money in NIL and in the United climate, and they chose not to because, like I said, they value each other, they care about each other, and yeah, I mean, we have to, the teamwork piece, we have to connect passes, Marty. We have to play as a team. We're not, you know, we're always one of the leading teams in the country in terms of number of assists per game, the percentage of baskets that have an assist attached to them. You know, assist to turnover ratio. So we're always going to preach extra pass, you know, get somebody open, with a screen, and then be connected on defense, you know, be a good communication team defensively, because we individually, you know, we're not the tallest team. We're not the quickest team. So are we an elite defensive team? No, we're not. We don't have all that, but if we're not connected and communicating, you know, we don't have a chance to be as good a defensive team. So that stuff matters. And that's why I value the college game, is I feel like you have that opportunity to still preach teamwork and emphasize it. But you also have gifted individuals, and you know, you still have to run plays for your best players, you know.
Yep.
And but the great thing about, I think, is the kids that we coach, is they understand that. You know, I mean, I'm gonna shout out Jamie Horan, North South kid who's been in our program 5 years, and you know, early on we said, Jamie, these are the plays that you can make, and these are the plays that we don't want you to make, and she took those things to heart. And you know the idea that I got to get in my bag,
yeah,
as you hear Well, only if your bag is, only if you can manage your bag. If your bag isn't, the other part is you got to know what your bag is.
Yeah.
And if you get outside your bag, you're hurting the team.
Mm-hmm.
And there are too many players nowadays who try to make plays they can't make.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think Jamie is a great example of making the plays that she can make and not trying to make the plays that she can't make.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you brought up a lot of things there and you know, pretty good transition there, Flan, because one of the things that your teams are really known for is the way they play together, your motion offense. I won't mention which head coach is on the podcast currently, who I was at his practice the other day, who I was very, very impressed. We were all right today. I don't know. I thought we were all right. And, you know, but again, I won't mention which head coach that is right now, but you guys do a tremendous job. I've talked to a couple of other coaches that you have played against. And when it comes up in the most complimentary way, they say, I hate playing against them. I just hate playing against them because they're so good at what they do. Their motion offense is just so difficult to guard and so forth and so on. And I've been watching you guys play for years. I think I've got some of it figured out, but I don't think I have. I still don't think I have everything figured out. You know, where does that motion philosophy come from? How do you teach it, Jim? I know back screens. You know, if I was coaching against you, that would be I would sit there and go, be aware of the back screens and don't get hurt on a slip or a cut to the basket. That would be the two things that I would be preaching to my team if I was coaching against you. But where does that motion philosophy come from? How do you guys teach it? If you'd be willing to share a drill or two that you guys maybe implement to help teach it. And obviously some of that is you're recruiting certain players to what you like to do as well, which is, you know, high school coaches really don't have that nearly as much. This is the number one thing I wanted to talk to you about, Flan, when it came to the X's and O's part of things. It's just, you know, what are you doing there? What's the magic elixir? I'm going to turn the floor over to you, my friend, and I'm just going to start writing away.
Well, yeah, and in motion offense, if I were a high school coach, I don't know if I would be as committed to it as I am as a college coach. I think in at our level, we get a much greater chance to work with our players. We have some summer access. I mean, there's limitations on how much we can practice with them in the summer, but we have that. We have fall access, again, with limitations, and then we have a 6-week run up in the season from. So there's just a lot more time to teach than you have at the high school level. And you've got kids that are, you know, 3-4 years older than the kids who are playing high school basketball. So it's going to look better with older players, but, you know, we break it down. We do a lot of 2-on-2 screen, 3-on-3 screen. To your point, I think we set more flares and back screens than most teams. And we do talk about slips and we emphasize slips and putting pressure on the basket. I mean, you know, as much as we want to shoot the three, and we're going to shoot probably 26 or 28 a game on average, we want to use layups to get good and better threes, right? If you never put pressure on the rim, and you don't set back screens, you don't, you know, just basket cut, face cut somebody and get enough layups, you know, it's easy to press out and take away threes. And so
is that something that you came up with, Jim, in the sense of like, you don't have, and you've never really had like an Audie Crooks or the Baylor type of post players or, you know, the, you know, just the 6'5", 6'6", you know, just pure old school back to the basket post players that are putting pressure on the basket by getting, you know, positioned down on the block. That's the way you guys are still putting pressure on the basket. It's just done a different way.
Correct. And you know, it stems from this, you know, one, the hardest player to recruit for us is, like you said, the 6'4", 6'5", elite back to the basket player, because everybody's recruiting them and everybody wants them. And then the second hardest, I think, is the really elite dynamic point guard that works great in ball screens and you know, has great quickness and all that. That's the second hardest, I think, to recruit, if not maybe one A and one B with that post. So we just said, let's recruit basketball players. Let's recruit undersized posts who are skilled, 6'1", mm-hmm. maybe 6'2", even 6 foot, who can shoot threes, handle it a little bit. Because they're going to have to guard us too. And we're going to struggle maybe in some cases to guard 6'5", at the other end, but they're going to struggle to guard us. And if they want to play zone, well, those kids can make threes. And then the other thing, like I said, is just not having a ball dominant point guard. And because I hear a lot of people say, well, when I ask, how are you going to be? Well, if our point guard can stay healthy, or boy, our point guard just doesn't have any experience. And we had a year where we had become a little bit more reliant on our point guard. And we had an injury, and, you know, man, when you can't handle the ball across your roster and you don't have a point guard that you can rely on, a healthy point guard, then that's frustrating. And there's as a coach, I've never felt more helpless. So I said, at that point, I said, we just got to work on ball handling across our roster. And if that means we have combo, whatever you want to call them, combo guards instead of point guards, and if our fours and fives are working on ball handling, you know, then that's what we're going to do. We're going to work on ball handling and passing across our roster, so that we never have a situation where, you know, somebody can press us and somebody can pressure us and they can just take us out of whatever we want to do. And, you know, we'll have our post players bring the ball to the floor in certain cases, if, you know, just to give teams different looks. But, you know, 2 years ago, we did not have one player on our team who had a negative assist to turnover ratio.
That's unbelievable. That's awesome.
You know, all of our players had, I think one of them had the same number of assists as turnovers. And then last year, I think we had one who had more.
Well, you only had six the other night, I saw. Six turnovers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, again, we work on that. We work on, you know, we expect our bigs to be good passers. We expect our wings to be good passers. And, you know, and I think that's a big – my assistant coaches do a great job in development. They're in the gym with them a couple times a week outside of practice, working on not just shooting, but – some ball handling things, and watching, you know, maybe watching 10 minutes of film with them, saying, you know, why didn't you throw this pass? Why did you throw this pass? And those are things you can do at the college level. But I would say we break it down. We do a lot of early. We do a lot of 2-on-2, 3-on-3 screen. You know, what are we looking for here? And then we build it back. Then you go to 5-on-5, and then you come back. You know, it's the part, whole part, you know, and then you come back when you start hurrying through screens and you miss cutters with a passer and your motion starts to suffer, then you have to go back and do more 2-on-2 and 3-on-3. But even in a course, even if we're running good motion, you know, you still got to break it back down. And then, you know, a lot of our shooting drills are incorporated, you know, it's a screening shooting drill. So we're going to set a screen away. We're going to curl the screen, and then the screener is going to replace and pop for a shot, or we're going to back cut for a layup, and then the screener is going to pop for a shot, or we're going to run a straight cut mm-hmm. for a shot. So we, you know, and my assistants are really creative with that. I mean, they'll, you know, I leave them in charge of all the shooting, because if you ever watch me shoot, you know that that's not my forte. But you know, so we try to incorporate concepts within our shooting drills that we're using. But, you know, like in practice tomorrow or this weekend, we're going to run some 4-on-4 motion. Mm-hmm. So we try to, you know, because sometimes you want the offense to, you know, we reduce the numbers if we're losing confidence. So 5-on-5 motion, sometimes on a given day, it can look ugly. So you say, okay, well, our players are thinking it's not going to work. Let's go to 4-on-4 because it'll look better. And then, you know, we in the context of all that, motion comes across as a democratic offense, right? Anybody can shoot it.
Sure.
Anybody can initiate. But even in the context of that, you still have players where you say, hey, we're not going to let you make that play. Whereas your Warren Jensen's and your Morgan Mollies and your Emma Ronfix, you're like, okay, go make a play once in a while, or you got to be a little more selfish in that situation. Uh-huh. So it is democratic, but it's not.
And, yeah.
You know, so I might even say during practice, hey, Warren, for the blue team, Warren's got to touch it the possession twice. And unless somebody's got a wide open shot, Warren's got to touch it twice, or Morgan's got to touch it in the mid post, or, mm-hmm. you know, just to get them to understand that there are still players who need to touch it within that motion concepts.
And some of that at times does settle in with itself, you know, because, you know, if a player clanks two in a row, usually they're like, maybe that shot isn't for me, or I shouldn't be shooting that, and I'll decline it and keep moving it as well. So sometimes it does, to a degree, settle itself, but then you have that one player every now and then where you got to have a little bit more of what I would just call a direct conversation, or maybe a little one-sided conversation, don't you think, Jim?
Yeah. And those are things you have to, when you coach, you have to weigh, do I say that in front of the team, or do I just say that to them separately? Because sometimes it maybe is, you know, a younger player versus an older player, maybe you can take it, you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, those are battles you have, you know. Okay, how do I say it? What tone do I use? And when's the best time to say it? Mm-hmm.
The art of coaching.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Coaches, by now you have seen the newest thing coming out of a pen and a napkin, the opening tip, Substack newsletter. I put an edition out there for free, and hopefully you see what a great investment this is going to be for you as a coach. I'm guessing it probably is, if you watch everything and listen to everything, it's going to take you almost 3 hours to get through everything on the opening tip newsletter here. What do we have in there? You've got an original article by myself here, just thoughts, ideas on different coaching topics. Into the Lab, that's probably my favorite thing, is the Into the Lab. It's me, another coach, and a whiteboard, and we're just drawing stuff up here. Stuff to help you out, to help you become better, and to help your team become better this coming season and beyond. Got another exclusive podcast. You heard the first one, Industriousness from the Wooden Pyramid of Success, and it's me and it's two semi-retired former girls basketball coaches, Matt Kern of York, Nebraska, Nate Wall of David City Aquinas here in Nebraska, and every newsletter, we're going to break down an aspect of Wooden's Pyramid of Success. Bookshelf recommendations from off the bookshelf, X's and O's stuff. I'm dropping in a university video. It's just going to be given to you there. You know, and I really believe in the products that I've put together. It's practical stuff that's going to help make you a better coach. And then we've got the Coach's Corner with links to clips and articles. As you saw, we had our two Olympic coaches, Steve Kerr and Cheryl Reeve. Just really, really good stuff here. And I know it's subscription-based, but goodness gracious sakes alive, as Coach Wooden would say, it is so affordable. $8 a month for two newsletters. That's $4 every newsletter. That's $2 every single week. Or you can get a year-long subscription, $75. That's 24 editions of the newsletter. That's basically $3 a newsletter. That's basically $1 an hour if it takes you about 3 hours to get through everything that you're getting here. It could not be more affordable. It could not be more positive for you. It's going to help make you a better coach. So subscribe to the Opening Tip newsletter. Folks, you're not going to regret it. Flynn, we talked a little bit about your schedule. You've almost every year, you don't turn down too many fights, my man. You know, we're fortunate to be where we're at in Omaha, where you've got a lot of really good programs around you that you could play. Just, you know, looking at it this year, you're starting off at South Dakota State, Drake, K-State, of course, the yearly battle with Nebraska. You're going to Northern Iowa, Wisconsin, Green Bay, who I think, didn't they win like 25 games last year or something like that?
Yeah, they beat us last year, too.
You're playing UCLA on your on the neutral floor out in San Francisco, and then of course you've got your conference schedule. That's not that that sounds like a murderer's row, but more often than not, that's the way you put together your non-conference. Now you said next year when you're going to be a lot younger, you might change that some, but you know, that'll be next year. But you know, what is kind of driven that philosophy for you as a coach? How has that helped you build your program?
Well, yeah, you're right. I say we're blessed and cursed that we're surrounded by, you know, South Dakota State, great program, has a hard time getting games, right? Because yep. Nobody wants to play them. Drake, great program. Nobody wants to play them because they know they can lose. Northern Iowa, same thing. Green Bay, you know, it's like, and Green Bay's not close. Well, like, that's, we're going to have to get on an airplane to go there. But these other places, you know, and in Nebraska, obviously, is a great game for us every year. And we just added Kansas State in a year that they're picked to win the Big 12. So good scheduling there. But yeah, I think you want to test your team, and you know, depending on how experienced you are, and you want to build a resume. And boy, I look at what Kirsten does on our volleyball side, and she plays. And now she's battling the Big East is not maybe as strong in volleyball. Sure. And so it's probably more of a necessity even for her. But they have a great program. But, you know, you could also argue that their program's gotten better because they've scheduled so tough. And you can go to recruits and be like, look, you know, in Kirsten's case, say they're playing Louisville and Nebraska, mm-hmm. Kansas. And, you know, and in our case, it's, we want to tell recruits, hey, we're going to play a really good schedule. We're going to find out who we are, what do we need to work on, and build resiliency. And I think players just want it. They want that. You know, Lauren Jensen said to me, you know, Marquette has been a really good team in our league. They finished third right behind us last year and made the NCAA tournament, but they graduated lost five starters. Their coach left. And they're actually picked, I think, the 10th in our league out of 11 this year. And, you know, Lauren said to me, gosh, I loved playing Marquette. I loved the battles. You know, we played them last year and the games were 76-70 and 76-71.
Yeah.
You know, we won one, we lost one. And, mm-hmm. you know, to hear your players say that, you know, that she was lamenting that Marquette is, you know, I'm not saying we're going to beat them this year, but she was lamenting that they are going to be down, that she loved playing them. I think that just means everything, right? It means if you're recruiting competitive kids, that's who they want to play. They want those games. They don't want to play.
Exactly.
They don't want to play a 40-point games. They want to be challenged. They want to be pushed. And, you know, so when she said that, I'm like, thankful, you know, thank you. You know, because that's, you want kids that are that competitive.
Absolutely,
And so, again, you have to put yourself in a situation where you can be successful. But we have an experienced team.
Yeah.
So if we lose a couple games, we're not going to completely lose all confidence, I think. And we've had enough success over the years. So. Mm-hmm. But that's where it is.
You know, you're talking about Lauren there, and I think one of the things that, you know, when high school coaches and their players don't see eye to eye, I'm not, obviously there's different circumstance over every different thing, but I think one thing that would have a decent percentage of that is when the players are not as competitive as the coach would like for them to be. And then the coach gets frustrated because, you know, this is important to me. Why isn't it important to you? And because they're teenagers, you know, there's a million different reasons why, you know, all the way down the line. And I think that's such a, that's just music to your ears as a coach when you hear your players say things like that, and you want players that will go out and embrace that competition, and like I said, you might lose, but man, it was a fun fight to be in, and those are the type of people that you want to go to, that you want in your foxhole with, don't you think, Jim?
Absolutely. I mean, I couldn't have said it better. I mean, that's what you want. You know, to your point, that can be a source of frustration. So when people say, "What do you look for in recruiting?" And we don't hit a 100% with this, but
Nobody
like,
does. Yep.
but you want kids that want to compete, and you want to identify that. I mean, obviously they have to have a certain level of athleticism, they have to have a certain level of skill, but you want to see kids compete. And you know, the tough thing, you know, is when we go out in the summer and they're playing 5 games in 3 days. You know, they're playing Friday night, two Saturday, Sunday. You know, it's harder to evaluate that piece because, you know, back when you and I were growing up, you played one, maybe 2 games a week.
Oh, yeah.
You looked forward to that Friday night when you know, if you were playing Tuesdays and Fridays, man, and you didn't play, you didn't get those opportunities the way these kids get the opportunities. So it's a little harder to gauge. Okay,
Yeah.
is this kid tired from having just played? You know, it's the third weekend in a row she's played a tournament, and it's her fourth or fifth game, and you know, but you want kids who can compete, and because, like you said, those are the ones that are gonna be good in the long haul. Like you're gonna have a hiccup here and there, but
Yeah.
if you're talking about over the course of a season, you know, those kids are the ones who really make it, you know, coaching great. They make coaching what it when coaching is what you love it to be, it's when you're coaching competitive kids.
You bring that up. That's one of the biggest changes as well in our seasoned and experienced state plan. I'm not joking when I say this. Our son Carter, he was a one basketball player. He's a senior up at South Dakota State, ironically enough. And he played in more basketball games before he got to junior high than I probably played in my entire career. Because like my seventh grade year, we played one game. My eighth grade, there was one, we practiced for 6 weeks for one game. That type of stuff. And again, I grew up like you. I mean, we both grew up in small towns in Iowa, and the AAU was not what it is today. Even for kids in small town in Iowa or Nebraska, it's not what it was today. And so it's that part of it. I think one of the things you're probably looking for in recruiting is, hey, this is your Sunday morning game. Are you still competing the same way you were on Friday night in your first game? I mean, I think that would be a big turn on or turn off for the type of kid you're probably looking for to in a lot of ways.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's the separator. You know,
Yeah.
if somebody's got, if
I love
somebody
that.
is maybe a little less competitive, but there's but their physical gifts and their skill is, you know, that great. Maybe you can sacrifice a little, but boy, for the majority of kids, that's the separator.
Well, speaking of the separator, one of the things that separates your team from pretty much every other team in the country this year is I don't want to say your team's old, Flan, as we talked about a little bit earlier, but I'm pretty sure a couple of them are getting AARP updates in their email and their mailboxes there at Creighton. By my count, five grads, two seniors, two juniors. And that's kind of what we were talking about at practice the other day. That's kind of it's a tremendous blessing, and there's way more positives than there is negatives. But it can be tough sometimes to coach a team that has been around that much, to keep that fire in the belly, the daily motivation to get better every day in practice. How have you and your staff kind of handled that, especially like in the preseason? You're into the dog days. Now you're at the point where you got a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel. Games are coming up here, that type of deal. But how do you coach a team? You've coached Morgan for how long? You've coached Lauren for how long? All these other kids, they've heard probably Flan speech 101 how many different times? So how do you keep them locked in? How do you keep them focused on the next thing, the process of getting better, and all those buzzwords that you need to do in order to get to where you really want to go?
Yeah, you're right. The message can get stale. It can get old. And, you know, and even from the coaches, and it's like, oh, again, I love Warren, so it's not, I'm just using this as an example. If I said, oh, Warren's not going to do that because I've watched him for 4 years and she won't block out at width of the galley. What's it, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. So you stop maybe coaching her in one or two areas because you're like, oh, she's not going to do it. Right? You feel that way as a coach, and she's probably saying, well, Flan, that's just his thing. He's gonna talk about that. But so yeah, I think short practices, one, or shorter practices, we don't go as long because they know what they're doing. Player-driven leadership. Like when we break, let's say we're doing a 10 or 12 or 15 minute section in practice, and we're doing 5-on-5. I'll blow the whistle and I'll be like, okay, you got 30 seconds or 40 seconds with your team. And so now, you know, Lauren or Morgan or Molly, somebody, they're taking their team and they're saying, okay, here's what we're.
I noticed you short. Did that the other day. That was awesome. Here's I love that. Sorry.
So, no, you're right. But I think that's something I won't do that with next year's team, because maybe once in a while, but I won't do it nearly as often with next year's team. But with this year's team, I think it's like, hey, it's, you guys have to have ownership. And then you just talk to them. You know, I don't preach to them as much. I mean, I'm a little more matter of fact, you know, and I'll be like, okay, that one of them is going to practice. We need to come back better tomorrow, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think you, the BF doesn't work. The hype doesn't work. It's, you know, and not that you're not going to, if you play 30 or more games, you're going to maybe give that rah-rah pregame speech a few times, but you can't give it 30 times.
Yeah.
But I think it's, like I said, it's shorter practices. It's player-led leadership and giving them opportunities. And then, you know, it's just treating them like adults. Hey, that wasn't good enough. You're going to have to be better. Mm-hmm. But just be, you know, pretty even tempered about it.
Mm-hmm. How much you loving coaching this team, Flan?
Yeah, a lot. I mean, I feel like they're, you know, I think I said to somebody, you know, what you don't want to do when you have experienced teams and teams that are all in and invested in each other is you don't want to just, you know, everybody says stay in the moment, but I think you also want to step back a little more frequently and just reflect on how lucky you are. And I think that's, you know, I was a philosophy major, so, you know, being able to just go all in, but then step back and be like, okay, I know I'm frustrated with Mallory right now, or I'm frustrated with Molly right now, but boy, she's a great kid, and she's, you know, 95% of the time she's doing everything we want her to do. But, you know, so I think those, I really am trying to do that, because mm-hmm. I think it's, you know, what a waste it'd be if we finished this year and I didn't have fun coaching this group.
Yeah. Awesome stuff, Flan. Social media stuff, what's your tags that you want to throw out there, or anything you want to put out there?
No, not really. Just follow us on Creighton Women's Basketball.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Jim, yeah. I've always appreciated, always admired your teams. Always enjoyed our friendship. Really happy that you came on here. Let's not wait another 250 episodes before you come back on.
I think that sounds great. I mean, if there's one thing I can do, Marty, it's talk. And I think, you know, our sports information director has to stand at the back of the room during press conferences and tell me to shut up. So, because I do get long-winded. But no, I really appreciate it. And I value your friendship too. And love the great work that you're doing with your podcast and the coach that you've been over the course of probably close to 30 years also, right?
Yeah, 28 was the number, you know. So yeah, so just a couple of small town Iowa boys trying to have a little fun with the ball. So well, hey Jim, thanks so much. I appreciate it. If you hold the line here a second, we're gonna wrap everything up. Again, Jim Flannery, head women's basketball coach at Creighton University. I want to thank him for his time. I mean, he's in the middle of everything right now, so for him to take an hour or so of his time to to come on here is terrific. Really appreciate that. We want to thank our founding sponsor, Cosac Chiropractic. Follow us on Twitter at A Pen and a Napkin. Download, rate, review, give us 5 stars, all that fun stuff. Email me if you have any questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, apenandanapkin@gmail.com. For Jim Flannery, Marty Plum, Pen and a Napkin, all that good stuff there. Coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.